8793.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, thank you for listening in, and welcome to another episode of Can We Be Real? This is Reverend Carl White, and we're broadcasting to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. And we're talking on the subject tonight on the defeminization of women and how men defeminize women and how women emasculate men. And what is the answer to that? We're going to be talking about masculinity and femininity and the traditional roles. Have they changed? What has really happened in our world today? And how are relationships being handled now, even to the point of people not really wanting even to stay together? So what is making the world go like this in a upturn where we're dropping off our loved ones just for the sake of masculinity and femininity? And you're listening to Reverend Carl White. I'm located on the web at Help Somebody, HelpSomebodyNet, HelpSomebody.net. Or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/HelpSomebody. Or on Facebook, you can find me on Facebook as well. I'm Reverend Carl, that's Carl with a K, on Facebook. And tonight we're talking about gender roles and the traditional roles of masculinity and femininity, and how have gender roles changed, and how do we handle it when our families are just not like the Brady Bunch or the Cosby Show or Everybody Loves the way the family is working together. When we got one lady, she contacted me and said something about defeminizing women, and it's really hard because what are the roles of womanhood, and how do we make relationships work, and how about if the woman is being forced to be the man and he feels like his manhood is challenged? And so what is the answer to all of these? We even have a caller online, and we're going to see if this caller would like to chime in on the call. We have a caller online, and you're on the air, caller.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And are you listening to our conversation tonight about the men who defeminize women and women?
I am.
Yes, and would you like, what do you have to say about that?
I think that it's it goes both ways. I think there's some issues going on with men defeminizing women, but a lot of times we have to consider the kinds of things that we're doing to ourselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the conversation goes beyond just it's their fault, what are they doing to us, but looking at it from a standpoint of what can we do to demand the respect that we deserve. And I heard someone say that you are the best teacher for showing someone how to treat you, you know. So.
And so how do you go about teaching another adult who has their own ideas of the way things should be? You know, I grew up in that where man take charge role and all bow down. And so, well, how do you teach a hard-head guy like that to?
I think you don't necessarily sit them down and say, do this, do that, do that. You sort of lead by example in the way that you carry yourself, in the way that you, you know, present yourself, engage in conversation if you're around him, the way you interact with other people. So you're not necessarily forcing an ideal on him, but you're showing him, you're demonstrating consistently what it is that you deserve and what you're asking for without even saying a word.
Well, that's real good. Now, when our relationships work, it seems like one of the major reasons for divorce in our country, and I don't know if you heard it, but a former Vice President Gore, after 40 years.
Yeah, after 40 years, splitting up.
How do you live with someone 40 years. Some people don't even live that long by themselves.
That's true.
And
that is so true.
Yeah, what would cause, you think, some of the reasons to fall apart after all those years?
I mean, I think that divorce is an option for a lot of people now, whereas it wasn't, you know, back in the day, so to speak. So I don't think the institution is being taken as seriously as it should be.
You mean the institution of marriage?
The institution of marriage, that's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's being taken as seriously as it should be. It's like, okay, because this is an option, then, you know, we'll just go for it. We've grown apart. We're, you know, we've fallen out of love. Things are changing, you know. And so that stick-to-itness is not very apparent. My parents are coming up on 40 years on Christmas Eve, you know. Yeah, so we go from high school sweethearts to being married 40 years. And, you know, everything's not rosy, not perfect in the home, but there's enough love there, and there's the commitment, you know, the covenant, if you will, that holds everything together. So, yeah, some people just say, even though it is an option, divorce is not an option.
Right,
I think that has to be a decision and a commitment that both people make, you know, that we're not going to get into this thing of, you know, oh, well, we're growing apart and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay, yeah, if you're growing apart, then really what can you do to grow back together, you know, if it's as simple as that, you know?
Yes, that's one of the things that we have to really face, the fact that we do grow together. And the situation is that a lot of times things come against us that we don't have any control over. But the one thing that we do control is our reaction.
Absolutely.
See, Ella Mitchell and Dr. Ella Mitchell and Dr. Henry Mitchell, they wrote a book in 1999. And at that time, when the book was written, it is called Together for Good. And during that time, when the book was written, they had been married for 55 years. I'm just going to read down just the beginning of it, just the contents. In chapter 1, it says, together at first, but not love. Imagine that. Yeah. Chapter 2, equally yoked. Then these are the words that are throughout the following chapter. Couplehood, together in ups and downs, together in tragedy, together time, building a life together, church and family together, together in turmoil, together still and glad regardless is the name of chapter 12. And then it goes on, together as a family, together as tragedy, together when troubled, together in maturity, together as deans, they were both deans of the university, and flowing together. And one of the key words there is together.
Yeah, it's a partnership.
Yes. And I think that the one of the things that they talk about in the book is that the ability to building a life together, it's work. And so many times we're just not willing to work. And one of the things you just said a few minutes ago was the stick-to-itiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we lack the glue?
We don't know what glue looks and feel. You know, we don't know what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what glue feels like, you know. And if we don't know what it smells like. If we haven't been around glue, we won't be able to recognize glue when we need it.
But don't you think there's something on the inside of us that tells us that we ought to at least be considerate and kind and take the other person in, or even take our vows seriously? Because before we, I perform weddings, and before I perform a wedding, I tell the couple that the ceremony is just a confirmation of what they brought to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've not married in their hearts already, then the ceremony is basically a...
null and void.
Yeah, it's just a routine. And,
yeah.
And so many of us, I think that we fall in love with being in love.
Absolutely. We like the whole idea of being married. It's like
mm-hmm.
not, well, not necessarily being married, but having a wedding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're two different things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have a strong marriage and a very simplistic wedding than to have a fabulous wedding and a weak marriage. So there's more emphasis on the day than it is the destination that you all are going to be journeying through life on. So I think the focus and the emphasis really needs to be shifted. And I think a lot of times people don't understand, like I said, the institution of marriage, why they should even be married in the first place. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they have... if they haven't seen any healthy marriages, some things you just don't know. And I'm a single woman, and so I look at my parents, I look at other people around me with healthy marriages, even people who haven't grown up in a two-parent home can still seek out mentorship. I think, you know, a lot of times we don't know what we don't know, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't know or that we can't seek out, you know, not to say you have to, you know, just, I don't know, take a kind of an informal approach to say, you know, I mean, someone in church maybe, wow, you and your mate have a really, you look like you have a really strong relationship. Can I sit down with the two of you for just a few minutes? And you never know how people will open up and be transparent with you about, you know, the vicissitudes of life and the reality of it all, because a lot of times people buy into the fantasy of what they think it is, not the reality of what married people know that it is, you know?
Yes. Now, that is so true. And one of the billboards I saw the other day, and it said, really enjoyed the wedding. I hope to enjoy the marriage, God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because so many people spend a lot of time planning the day of the wedding, but not to plan how to be married. Well, I just got an email from another lady. She says, how do men defeminize women? The answer, by not fulfilling their traditional roles as men. Here's the cycle. The work is there, house, car, discipline, work, and somebody has to do it. Everybody's busy protecting their fragile egos. So she does what he will not do to keep the peace. When she
mm-hmm.
does the job he won't do, he feels emasculated, which leads
mm-hmm.
to insecurity. So if...
I can see that, yeah.
Now, do you think that this whole mindset is because we've got false images of what manhood and womanhood are? Well, what I mean by that is that the model of manhood that we basically grew up with, and that the man is the provider, the man goes out, he does all the dirty work, the woman stays home, and those type of situations, we got that model during a time when the economy was so robust that one person could go out and work a job and pay all the bills and provide all of those things. But nowadays, a lot of times you have single parents, mainly females. A lot of times
yeah.
you have dual families where both of them have to work.
Yeah.
And the men and the role. So how do we deal with our model of manhood and femininity when it's not really accurate?
Yeah, it's not the same as it used to be, you know, in terms of the, like you said, the economic structure, the fact that men and women now are having to go out and work, and, you know, usually or typically you don't see the men just going out and working and the woman being the homemaker and taking care of the children. But still, there is a responsibility, even if the woman goes out, and depending upon what type of status she's attained, if you will, in her profession, he's still the head of the household. And it doesn't matter, you know, what you're doing. You can be in the boardroom holding it down, but still when you get home, you know, wherever he sits at the table is the head, not because of where the chair is positioned, but where he is, so to speak. And so I think there's a level of still, it should be a level of respecting those roles, even though the actual family structure may not be as it was back in the day when we could, we did know of people who, of the women who stayed home and took care of the house, and the men just went out to work. So I think, you know, even though things have changed a little bit, I think, you know, knowing that there is a foundation that's already been set means that we can lean to that and glean off of that as much as possible, despite the changes in our economic structure and the structure of the family itself.
And that's a good foundation if it works. And for those who can, you know, say that that is a good foundation, a good structure, and it works. But I'm kind of falling back in on the word together that was so prominent, together for good. Even in the Christian society, the only thing that God ever called not good that God created was for when Adam was alone. When humanity is alone, God said that's not good.
So
I think we ought to go back to the original reason why we came together.
Absolutely.
Did we come together to compete with each other?
Absolutely.
You make X dollars and I make XYZ dollars. Or you cleaned up the kitchen that time, I cooked this day. I mean, did we come in, I brought in 5 apples and you bring in 20?
No.
And so now the situation becomes this competitive individualism in the household.
Yeah, which is dangerous in and of itself.
Yeah, it's real dangerous because then people begin to say, well, now since, you know, I done flipped the script because I'm bringing home more bacon than you bringing home. So now when you used to be superior, now I'm superior. And so you got to bow down when I come in. And I think that's the vicious cycle that we buy into because we've bought this paradigm, this model of life that is after the fall thinking.
Yeah.
See, because in Genesis 1, chapter 1, and Genesis chapter 2, they were both co-creators together.
Mm-hmm.
And see, it's only Genesis 3 where man shall be your head, and even in childbirth, you're going to have pains and so forth. And a lot of that's a narrative story that, you know, yet to be filtered out all the way through, but the principles are nonetheless true that in the beginning God created humans both as co-creators together. And once the fall or the separation came, when the awareness came, then we get into this well, I'm bigger than you, and I'm the superior one, and you're the inferior one. And it even went straight to all the way through the culture.
That's true.
So even it says, during our nation, which is primarily Christian, it says that this is from Bell Hooks. She's written a book. It's Feminism is for Everybody, Passionate Politics. And oftentimes when we hear the word feminist, then we think of angry women who hate men and they want to go against nature and how God, and they're all lesbians, and how they're talking, want to take all the jobs and make the world hard for men who don't stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But feminism, that's not feminism. feminism, as bell hooks says, is for everybody, because feminism is about equal rights. It's about rights. It's about women gaining equal rights. And it's a movement to end sexism and sexist exploitation and oppression. So the roles are really clear, and it's like the problem is that there, whenever we have the superiority and inferiority mindset, then automatically, if I'm the superior one, then every day I come home, I got to reinforce that, and I can't ever let my guard down. And it becomes the vicious cycle that says that, you know, if I don't stay in my position and you don't treat me with my pseudo power position, then I feel emasculated. And so the competition feeds into that. And so when males are superior to females and that they should rule over us, that comes with a price. So they're required to dominate. They're required to exploit. They're required to oppress. And some even use violence to keep the ideal of male domination in place. And the key to it is a world where there's no domination, where we are co-creators or co-workers together, and we're equal. It's almost a vicious cycle in the sense that the mutuality, the shaping our interaction has been predetermined, and we need to end it. And not only just the domination thing, but there's a lot of isms we need to end. There's the class elitism and in racism and imperialism, but it comes from a superior mindset of thinking.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, even in our Pledge of Allegiance, Dr. John Kinney said that even in the Pledge of Allegiance, it's where we say one nation under God. And the if we're a nation under God, then we're a nation without God. Because God always reveals God's self to humanity, and God is with you, no matter where you whitherever so thou may goest, I am with you.
And
But we're a nation under God, and then we wonder why we have the same superior mindset in our households, and so we set up these hierarchies that no one can live up to. And that's the misunderstanding that leads to a lot of problems, where it has said, now, she says here, God has ordained that according to our society, primarily Christian culture, that God has ordained that women be subordinate to men in domestic household. And even though masses of women have entered the workforce, even though many families are headed by women who are the sole breadwinners, the vision of domestic life continues to dominate the nation's imagination, is one where the logic of male domination is intact. And it's wrong-minded assumption that all female space would necessarily be an environment where patriarchy and sexist thinking would be absent. And even in churches and in religious, only men can serve as priests and bishops. And just now recently, you know, women are being accepted in the pulpit.
Yes, definitely.
Well, you're listening to Can We Be Real? And we appreciate you calling in and listening on the line. One of the things that we've come to understand that relationships are tough no matter what. And even in relationships where people are together on their jobs, if you would like to join in on the conversation, you can call in at 347-855-8793. The phone lines are open. And we are talking about the emasculation and defeminization of women and men. Some of the things that we need to really deal with right here are tolerance and understanding and patience and learning to relax our standards, because so many times it's that people don't come to a conclusion or come to an understanding that no one is ever perfect. They're not perfect, I'm not perfect, and no one else is perfect. And not relaxing our standards in the sense that we don't have a level that we expect for people, but that we can be a little more mindful of the other person and take them in consideration. It's amazing, though, if we get too far out, that there comes to be a point where we don't deal with reality. And even in our world today, we have a lot of problems that we have to look at. And so as a consequence, there's a lot of domination, and the domination usually is one of the things that we have to face, that it comes to us to relax in our standards and knowing that we can work together as co-creators. So one of the things that we've come to understand, even in the learning to deal with, even in education, and some of the things that we need to overcome some of the domination thinking, is that we need to have good education programs where we have teachers and service workers in all areas that really need to be paid more. And women and men who stay home and raise children, they should have wages that are subsidized by the state, as well as homeschooling programs, which enable them to furnish and finish high school and work on graduate degrees at home. And with advanced technology, we could remain in the home and be able to study and even watch in college courses online. It's some of the problems is that it's welfare is often looked upon as something negative, but not warfare. And we'll spend billions and billions on military spending that's sanctioned by our government and all citizens, but we're not willing to increase minimum wages and make it so that people can understand and move forward. Even till today, I think that minimum wage should be $17.53 an hour. And if it is, then we would look at people where they could actually make a living and move on forward. Because one of the things that's so hard nowadays is actually the favoritism that is go because of sexuality and because of men and women who have unequal pay, and yet the standards are all the same. And then there's an assault on welfare oftentimes, that we look at women on welfare or single mothers on welfare and without money, and we blame them for the economic plight and demonized. And it comes to a point where we need to be visionary thinkers, and we can look down the line and see that education is the key to moving forward and empowering people so that they can make a stand in the world. I see many men blame women working for unemployment and for their unemployment and their loss of stability and their identity and their identity to even being seen as providers. And even if this identity that they've kind of linked onto is just not real, because the reality is that if we're together and we're working together, then we can have a relationship together. And it starts at home. It starts with self-care. Before we could change the world, we need to change ourselves. Even Michael Jackson had a song said it was the man in the mirror. And knowing that we want to change the world, but we really only have access to change ourselves. And when we come to realize that, even if we be truthful about it, we only can change ourselves, because it's tough enough to change myself and without me trying to follow and get someone else to change by my words. Because when we work on self and we set a new model, a new expectation, then we'll come to the conclusion, we'll see that people will follow what you do before they swallow what you say. And one of the keys is, how do you deal with your problems? And how do you deal with your problems when we say that something is a problem and I want to throw in the towel and give it up? It's that we have to learn to take control, and not take control of the situation or take control of the other person. We have to take control of ourselves. The problem is not what you may think. The problem is not the problem. It's our reaction to a situation that gives us a problem. And see, even in counseling, when we're counseling people, we've come to people come to us and they're talking about their mate or their spouse or the other person that they're with. They'll come and say, well, you know, they make me mad, or they make me angry, or they're always doing this, or they're always doing that. And, in fact, they won't even come in here and talk to you. And the key is that the person who comes in to talk to you, they're the patient, not the person who won't come in and talk to you. We have to deal with the reality of people as they are and who they are and face facts. The fact is that even though somebody may be snakish, and we'll say that they're And they're sneaking around and they're doing all kind of dirt. And oftentimes, if we just use common sense, we'll come to find out that we knew they were snakish when we first got with them. And in fact, it may have been part of the attraction that the little slick side, the wiry side, the side that gets a person excited. And then we say, well, maybe I could change that person. Maybe I could work with that person. But the reality is, you knew that he or she was a snake when you met them. And so now we're going to complain when they begin to bite us. And the situation is that we have to learn. In fact, it was our choice that allowed that person in our life. And snakes, they can be charmed. And lions, they can be tamed. But we have to understand where they're coming from and to know where they're coming from in order to work with the person. And if we're properly dressed, we can work with anything. We can work with anthrax if we're properly dressed. It's up to us to decide our reality. We have another caller on the line, and let's see if we can bring in a caller on the line. Caller, are you on the line? We've got you on the line at 3495. That's your number. Are you there? Are you there, caller?
I'm listening. I'm just listening.
Oh, you're just listening. Well, bless your heart. Thank you for calling in, and we appreciate you. And we have another caller on the line at 4008. Are you willing to speak up, or did you want to chime in? Are you there, caller?
I'm here.
Okay. You didn't want to add into it.
No, I just walked in, my brother, but
okay.
I definitely want to be, yeah, just wanted to hear the discussion.
All right. Well, we appreciate you. We'll bring you back in a little bit later. Yes, indeed. Well, it's up to us to decide our reality, and we set the standard for our lives. The determining factor is that once we determine what we'll accept and what we won't accept, is that we set the level for our life. It's up to us to decide the reality. And so many times people have gotten to the point where we have looked at ourselves and we say, well, you know, they're a selfish person and they're mean and self-centered and they don't care about anybody but themselves. But the reality is that self-preservation, as they said, is the first law of nature. And one of the most quoted scriptures, even from the Bible, is the 23rd Psalm. And if you ever read it and look at it, you'll see it's a selfish text. It says that the Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. And he makes me, he leads me, he restores me. He, even though I walk, I fear no evil. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me. Surely in goodness and mercy shall follow me and I. And so the whole concept of that Psalm of David is that it's me. I determine my reality, and I make the reality real. So many times we look at people and we make wrong statements. And by making wrong statements, we give them our power. We'll say things like, you make me sick, or you made me angry. And how can anyone make us do anything? You did what you did. They did what they did. And we have to own it. We have to get to a point where we understand that I choose my reality. I choose my destination. And the emasculation of me is determined by the standard I set, whether I'm going to be involved as a traditional mindset that doesn't allow me to look beyond the old paradigm. And the old paradigm saying that a man comes in, he's got to be dominant, he's got to be superior, he's got to be one up on everybody else. And it's a falsehood. Nobody can live up to that because we're created as co-creators together. And even in the book with Dr. Henry Mitchell and his wife, who in 1999, she just recently passed away. God rest her soul, Dr. Ella Mitchell, she passed away. But in 1999, their book that they wrote, the title of the book is Together for Good. In almost every chapter, the word together is in the title of the chapter. And together is the key. As co-creators, we came together not to tear each other apart, not to wear each other down, but we came together for good. And that's the thing is that we didn't come together for competition. And we bought into American capitalism that says that I need to be independent, I have to be competitive, I have to be attractive, I have to be influential, I have to be a position in power. And we buy into this false system that nobody can live up to, when we're supposed to just be together for good, together in tragedy, together in celebration, together in hope, together whether or not we're rich or whether or not we're poor. Together is the key, because if we stick together, and even the Bible says, how can two walk together unless they agree? And understanding is the key. When we can have an understanding, you be you, I be me, and you understand my story, it's hard to hate someone when you hear their story. When you understand their story and their reasoning and their way of thinking, then you can make a new reality with that person. You can set a new paradigm. Even Tupac, he had a line in one of his songs. His song, he said, you'd be crazy too if you walk a mile in my shoes. An old Indian proverb, American native proverb, says that never criticize another man until you walk a mile in his moccasins. And that's the key. I think we've gotten away from this truly being together and co-creators as we were in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, and we've gotten into this after the fall thinking where the man shall be the lead and you shall follow. And we go into this thing not as workers together, but as competitors. And so it's just like if you go into the boxing ring and you're in a boxing ring, and so you go to work, and my God, you go out in the boxing ring and you got to fight. And you fight and you fight and you get back to your corner, which is your home, your castle. And so now, instead of coming into the home or the castle and getting some Band-Aids and getting bruised and getting your bruise patches up and getting a little water to drink, now you got to fight in your corner. And that's the problem, is that we haven't taken that seriously when we are together for good, because even in gender equality, instead of exclusivity, we look at it and saying, this is a way of living and understanding that keeps us working together. It's not even, and it overspills even into our children. Here's from Bell Hooks, and feminism is for everybody. And it says, and it is especially vital that parents learn to parent in nonviolent ways, for our children will not turn away from violence if it is the only way they know how to handle difficult situations. When we are together, we don't have to get violent. And that's a very truism there. But the thing is that even when I grew up, there still was a certain amount of, you wouldn't call it violence, but there was correction. And it's true, you know, some people say, well, you shouldn't holler and you shouldn't spank your kids and you shouldn't do this. But my thoughts is that sometimes you got to reinforce corporal law and before the state issues out capital punishment. And a lot of these folks, they won't correct their children, but then they'll call the police on them. And so there's a difference between abuse and giving a spanking. So the thing is that if we're not cruel, we're not unkind, we're not violent, and we're not unfaithful, we can keep our relationships healthy. We can keep them together. It's a matter of love is the key in order to make this thing working. If we had a real quest in life to make this work and to get out of this, and I think that we need to just get right out of the emasculation thing and come up with a new model for my manhood so that I'm not tied to what someone may think. Let's see if any of our callers want to chime in on what we're talking about. Let's see. Caller, did you have anything you want to say?
Yeah, me? Am I on?
Yeah, which caller are you?
202. How you doing, man?
202. Okay, yeah, you're on. How would you? What do you think about this femininity and masculinity and these models that we've bought into to think that we're supposed to live up to?
You know what? You're one of the very few people that's talking about this feminism and masculinity. And you know what? I've been thinking about this for the last 5 years. We are in the midst of a gender war. But very few people even know it, and it's surprising that you're talking about it because I don't hear anyone talking. Very rarely do I hear men actually talk about this particular problem, which is what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you're saying is 1,000% true, but I think the problem what I'm seeing here is that I'm not trying to blame women, but I think we have a lot of females raising males,
mm-hmm.
So you got a lot of men that really are unsure of themselves, that
mm-hmm.
do not embrace their masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm seeing guys with earrings in their ears. You know, they like their hair braided, wearing tight jeans. They're taking on a feminine mindset. I see that all the time. And the women are taking on masculine characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're having all these problems right now, I think, in America. I see it clearly, man, and you see it clearly. Men, you know.
Now, do you think that just by someone wearing earrings or someone wearing tight jeans, that would determine their level of masculinity or femininity?
No, it's not. It's just really not the earrings, because I wore earrings in my ear, a left earring.
Okay.
But it's just that some of the males are taking on female characteristics, like
mm-hmm.
guys don't like to get dirty anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have their nails done and they have their earrings and their hair is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they want to look pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Those are characteristics of a female, and I see that all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think on one hand, it's nothing wrong for a man to want to groom himself.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know, come on now, you ain't never even got a pedicure or a manicure.
No, look, there's nothing wrong with a man looking good. You know, I'm serious, because I always keep my hair cut. I get my hair cut once every 2 weeks.
I got a haircut today.
But I got one, too, for the finals. But what I'm seeing is that a lot of the males are taking on female tendencies. I see it all the time. Men are real emotional.
When you say female tendencies,
Yeah.
What would you consider a female tendency, like cooking or cleaning or what?
No, no, it's like guys are emotional now.
Emotional?
You know, they're really, really emotional. I've really noticed it in the last 10 years.
Would you say emotional or oversensitive?
Both. Men are really, really emotional. You know,
so you don't think men should feel?
Huh?
You don't think men should feel?
Well, you know what? In the old ways, man, you know, men kind of, you kind of held things within a little bit more. You didn't always show your emotions.
But check this out. Why would God give us tear ducts?
Well, tears are for your eyes, to keep your eyes from dirt in it. That's what it's for, really.
Yeah, keep your eyes clean. I mean, but we cry. You ever been to, like, Manpower? Never heard of that. But anyway, T.D. Jakes, he used to have a conference called Manpower, and it was the most amazing thing that I ever saw, because you'd get 15,000, 20,000 guys, just guys, man. And we would get in there, and they would pray, and they would start confessing some of the stuff, because some of the guys had really did bad things to women, dogging women out, pimping women, lying, cheating, stealing, cutting. And so you got hard dudes in here, man, and they're in there sharing their heart and their soul with each other, and they're getting this stuff off their chest. And Jakes even wrote a book called He-motions. He-motions. So I think that there has to be a balance in there.
Sure there has, but I honestly think that the balance has gone too far in the wrong direction, you know.
Well, that's not balanced then.
No, we aren't balanced right now.
Mm-hmm.
And men need to, you know, I mean, I hate to say this, man, but, you know, men are the people solving problems out here.
Men
know?
Are the people solving problems?
Yeah, we do solve problems.
Yeah, well, you know, we solve problems and we cause problems too. Man, please.
But,
I mean, do you know that most out of the tendency, most men go to prison before women do, right?
Do they?
Yeah,
I
more,
don't know.
We got more males in prison and they're more violent.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of oftentimes they've had some psychological studies on males and females. And they say that little girls, because they cry, and little boys tend to fight. So we need to take on the opposite roles to get back to that point of balance. Little boys need to cry a little more, be a little more sensitive. Little girls need to be able to stand up for their rights a little more and be a little more aggressive. But not to the point where you are overbound by these things. And so let's see if we can't bring somebody else in on it. But I appreciate your call, appreciate you listening, and we'll see. It's just exactly what. Are you on there, brother? Did you want to chime in on the oversensitivity of men?
How you doing?
I figured, because you know we only got like 5 minutes, we got 11 minutes left. I know.
So enjoying the discussion that you two brothers were having that I thought I'd sit solidly in.
I can bring the brother back on.
But I think clearly he alluded to something that I think we should definitely take a moment to pause and reflect on. And he was saying that clearly we're at a point of gender war.
Gender war. Now
we
now,
are.
That's and you know what? Because I think that's part of our environment too. Because we have a war on everything.
Exactly.
Even a war on drugs. That.
Well, yes.
Right.
And I would clearly agree, Carl. That I think he brought up a very valuable point. But I think we may want to look at it from a slightly different perspective when we talk about gender war. Clearly, we see that the tension between men and women are very high. It's competitive, everything from the job market to relationships to positions,
mm-hmm.
who's running the household,
right.
who's right. getting one on who, one up on who. And I think we're in a place, and you spoke about it, about being not in balance with the equality of the genders.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see if the young lady on the line wants to chime in. Are you still on the line, young lady? At 3495, are you still on the line? Okay, we'll just let you stay there. And yeah, the gender wars. I think that oftentimes it's feeding into just exactly what I was saying, is that competitive, individualistic idea of manhood and femininity that I think we need to start, you know, like you need to reformat that hard drive.
Well, yeah,
and get some new software, because that's like, you know, you still running Windows 2000.
Yeah, I think you brought up a valid point. I think what needs to happen is neither need to be in competition with one or the other. They need to complement each other.
Yes.
Masculinity needs to complement femininity. Femininity needs to complement masculinity. You need a balance of both, a yin and a yang.
But that's not what's happening. It's not what's happening. Well, what I see, I think men have been just giving and giving and giving to women.
Mm-hmm.
And now women are getting a little bit arrogant. I honestly believe that. And they really do not want to be under the control of a man. And I see that.
You know, I would say that might be a popular tendency, but I can guarantee that once we begin to example the type of person that we want to see, we'll attract that person to us. Now, I'm taking it real personal right now, because it was only after I was able to get out of that mindset that I start walking in this new identity that I attracted my wife. And, man, I tell you, she is my compliment. Now, I may not be a perfect person, but I'm perfect for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's perfect for me. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the whole point of Henry Mitchell and Ella Mitchell's book, is that if you look in this title, the title of the book is called Together for Good. They say together in turmoil, together in glad and regardless, still together still and regardless, together as a family, challenge and renew. Together is the key, and we're winding down on our last few minutes. Go ahead, if you want to make your final point there from up in 202.
Yeah, my final point is this. I used to think women, I used to laugh at feminism years ago. You know, women just trying to do what they want to do. But you know what? Now,
mm-hmm.
I see it as a serious threat to mankind. I really think that feminism is going to destroy our society.
I got your point, and it's well taken. I would highly recommend Bell Hooks' book. It's called Feminism is for Everybody. And the key to it is that it's overcoming the sexuality, the gender wars, the ideas that it's that we're all co-creators together. That's the key to it. We have one other caller on the line. Did you want to contribute to our conversation, caller at 6421? Are you there, caller? A 586 caller. We thank you for calling in. I know you must be just listening. That's a wonderful thing. And so even in the Bell Hooks book, she says here that one of the things that we have to do is to be able to move towards equality, where we're equals again, and we seek roles that will liberate rather than restrict and confine. Because anytime I get into putting her under and I'm over, it not only holds her down, but I have to stay still to hold her.
Exactly.
You can't keep somebody in one place without standing still. And then we wonder why we're not progressing as a nation, whether it's classism, whether it's racism, whether it's elitism, whether it's sexism. All of these things restrict and confine. I just had a good friend of mine, my God, and God only help him, but he was was in a house, and he moved out. He became a recluse, and my God, I hope this doesn't happen to anybody, but the same thing that happened to Luther Vandross. But he fell out on Monday, had a stroke, and they didn't find him till Friday because we were not together, and folks had to track him down that he talked to, and he lived alone. And so the thing is that just like as the, in the beginning, where and we're down to our last 4 minutes on this call, is that the idea is that we have to come to an understanding that it's not good when we're alone. And a lot of times we'll be in relationships and we'll still be alone because we're not honest. And the key to it is to deal honestly with ourselves so that we can deal honestly with other people. We have to get to a point where we face facts and deal with reality openly and honestly. It is a key to understanding, knowing that we have to face the truth about life. And some things we can change, other things we cannot change. But the number one thing that we have to work on is ourselves. And as we work together for each other, there's no way that we can restrict and confine other people. And we need to turn towards our inner greatness and knowing that even though we may not be perfect, we have to be able to understand that as long as we stick together, we can work through this thing together. And I would say that if you talk to other people, that even as we get advice from others, be careful about the advice, not the person, but the advice, to check it out and to check it out to see what they're saying, whether or not it's true, whether or not if it's sound advice, because truth has a certain sound to it. It has a certain ring to it, that it rings clear. Truth will be truth no matter what we do, no matter what age, what stage, or what life we're having. Truth is just truth. And so we have to check it out and see if their advice is sound and does it work for us. And in fact, I would advise you not to even believe anything I say, but check it out. Because if I'm telling you truth, and you check it out, it will only be verified by your own empirical research. Marvin Gaye even had a song. He said, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. But that doesn't mean doubt the person or build up walls. We have to be able to check out and see if what we're dealing with is reality or if it's some false ideas of masculinity and femininity that we've bought into that make us competitors rather than co-creators. It's just like this. If you look at the word creation and reaction, they're exactly the same letters, reaction and creation. The only difference between reacting to a situation and creating a new reality is that you move the C out of the middle of reaction out front. And so then you can create a new reality. If you see clearly, you can create a new reality. I thank you all for listening. I thank you all for turning in. And I hope your relationships grow together in deeper love and understanding, knowing that God brought you together for good, not to be competitors, not to be masculine, not to be feminine, but together as one where two or three are gathered together. There you go. You'll be together because the third one in the midst will be God with you. I thank you very much. My name is Reverend Carl White. Visit my website, helpsomebody.net. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/helpsomebody. Or look for me on Facebook. I'm at facebook.com, Reverend Carl White. I greatly appreciate you. You can send me an email. I'm at carl@efministries. That's K-A-R-L. Carl@efministries.org. We greatly appreciate you. God bless you and God keep you. Keep on pressing on. Keep on moving on. And learn to live your life together for good. Pick up those books, Henry Mitchell, Together for Good, and Feminism is for Everybody. Bell Hooks. God bless you. God bless you. And we'll talk to you soon.